Apps as an authorized FSP.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
Our investment school this evening, Kokkie Kwaiman. Kokkie is the portfolio manager and executive director, Denka Capital. And when last did you feel this sort of wild and woolly about investment markets, Kokkie? It's gone very pear-shaped very quickly after a long, slow burn south.
Yeah, I mean, this year, what really sets this year apart for me is just the large number of uncertainties. You know, COVID was in that regard fairly easy, in that, you know, once we worked out what was happening with COVID, and remember the markets reacted very quickly when it came to the shutdowns, but then you had to work out how long the shutdown would last, how long it would take a vaccine to be found, but you knew that, you know, it would be found and that economies would be opened and you would have a very strong rebound. And even similar in 2008 was interesting in that obviously a lot of large corporations were falling over. The economy was going into a steep recession. But towards the end, one clearly got, you know, you could see when Hank Paulson, who was then head of Treasury in the US, when he was dealing with problems, letting Lehman Brothers go, saving AIG. But you had a fair amount of certainty that the system had fallen so much that you were going to get a recovery. But this year, you've got so many different factors. You've got, firstly, a transition phase from negative interest rates to positive interest rates. So that's a massive transition that's happening in the world. Then you've got the war. We don't know how long that's going to last and how much worse it's going to get. Then you've got in within Europe, you've got again got the tensions of Italy not being able to sustain what it's doing. You got the UK where Liz Truss is starting, trying something new. Do I have to go in South Africa? Africa, we've got rolling blackouts and Eskom and a government that seems to have just lost track of what it needs to do.
No, so, but I mean, you started giggling at Liz Truss, and Liz Truss is doing nothing that she didn't campaign for the leadership of the Conservative Party on. She was absolutely clear. She said, I'm going to expand the budget. And the Bank of England then can deal with any inflationary consequences because this is what we're going to do. And unusually for a politician, she's doing exactly what she said she would do. And then we're surprised by her doing what she is doing with Kwasi Kwarteng. And there's no sign that either of them is going to back down anytime soon.
No, I mean, if everyone starts there, because there's a big lesson there in that. What she's really doing is she is going against the current or the established order that became prevalent in among central banks and governments, that governments could spend and keep interest rates low and, you know, just build up debt. And that government is in the end the best way to regulate and grow an economy. I mean, that's a big problem in South Africa as well. The government believes it creates jobs, yeah, and it must do everything and control everything. And Liz Truss is coming exactly as you say, the opposite. She's saying the private sector is much better at creating jobs. So let's give capital to the private sector. And she's doing that by actually reducing tax rates. But I think if I was to criticize her, she's not going to listen to what I have to say. But
I'll send her a copy of the podcast. She's always demanding it, Liz. You know, she goes, please, if anyone says anything mean about me, send it to me, and I'll deal with them. I'll send James Bond around.
I'm going to say positive things about her. So, but I think the two things she didn't do, which she could have done. Just think back. What is she doing? Firstly, she's doing something very good. I think she's capping the effect of higher gas and electricity oil prices for the population, and especially the poorer part of the population. The wealthy people can always afford a higher gas price, but she's capping it for the poor. And the second thing is she's saying, listen, the private sector is better at creating jobs, driving growth. So let's cut their tax rates and give them capital. And by the way, she's going to do other things as well. She's been mentioning the insurance sector, where the previous regime or the previous government had been burdening them with all kinds of reserves that they needed to require. They needed to. Now she's saying, listen, those reserves are unnecessary. We're going to remove the necessity for those reserves so that can be plowed back into the economy. So very good. And then third thing, as she said, as you said, she warned them she is going to fund this with initially more government debt. But I think what she did wrong is maybe two things. Number one, that it's very important for a government to sustain itself. And if it wants to lower tax rates, it's also, and it actually, it is starting to do reform. She's also mentioning rolling back a lot of the regulatory burdens on society and small businesses specifically. But I think you also then need to cut your government expenditure. And so, and that obviously has just been elected. So she can't have all those plans ready. But I think number one, she should have said, listen, these are the first two steps, protect the consumer against higher electricity prices and free up the private sector with lower tax. But we are appointing two commissions. Ooh, and now we start sounding like our government, Cyril Ramaphosa, who's just appointing a lot of commissions who do nothing. But we want feedback from them in a specific time, because we haven't got much time, we've got to get this economy going, to do two things for us. Number one, give a clear feedback as to where regulation and SMEs can be unburdened. So we appoint and we say, we're going to do this. So, and the second one is to also give us advice on where they think government is wasting money, unnecessary money, where government can cut. So if you cut taxes, you've got to cut your expenditure as well, else your budget doesn't balance. And I know she referred to that as a bit of abacus economics. It's interesting. But I think the markets would want you to also be responsible. And I think the market will believe you or give you time if you come with a plan and say, look, I don't know exactly what we're going to do. I've just become prime minister. Let's actually do work on this. So I think if she comes with a plan, and even now, Cecil says, look, I'm going to appoint these people now to come and give us feedback as to how we can make the life of private sector easier to create jobs and be how we can also streamline government. I think that will actually win her a lot of time.
Where she has been criticized is this notion of trickle-down economics, and she's a believer in trickle-down economics. You cut tax rates for the rich, and ultimately everybody benefits. But what we've seen happen in the last couple of days is that the rich, because they're the only ones with any money left, have been absconding from the United Kingdom, getting their money out as quickly as possible. And one wonders if this doesn't backfire in a very serious fashion, because immediately we are seeing some discontent within our own party, of course, which not everybody is on board with this particular strategy.
So absconsion, that's the right, is that the fear of a weaker pound.
Yeah.
And because remember what she is doing by creating more debt is she could be unleashing with a weaker pound, because you know, her plan was going to weaken the pound. So the fear now is that one of the two, either it keeps going if the Bank of England does nothing, or the Bank of England has to hike rates to fight inflation and to arrest the fall of the pound. And then that's going to make the growth trajectory very difficult if you do that against high interest rates. So the Bank of England's already got to hike interest rates with inflation where it is. So look, I've got an incredible amount of sympathy with her, because she inherited, it's almost like she came in to bat. Lance Knoesler used to have to do that with Pat Simcox. I'm giving my age away. But, you know, remember, they always came in with like two or three innings to go and were expected to hit sixes. And that's almost to win the game. And she almost has to do that, because she's coming in with both Europe and the world in a very difficult situation with runaway inflation and the UK in a very tough, but I think I would have said, give yourself a bit more time. Do the initial and just say, we're going to give us a bit more time. Get a lot of consultation.
But she's arrived, and I think her plans were delayed by a week or two because the Queen died. She's not, I mean, you know, don't give us time. She's hit the ground running. She's nailed the colors to the mast, and she's asked for a fight, and she's going to get a fight, I suspect. Certainly, she's given the opposition parties in the UK something to talk about. And tonight, she's also tweeted in the last couple of minutes, congratulations to Giorgia Meloni. This is the new Italian prime minister. Her party's success in Italian elections, from supporting Ukraine to addressing global economic challenges, the UK and Italy are close allies. Oh, why you don't just shut your mouth sometimes and just focus on your own problems?
Why align yourself with Italy now?
Anyway.
Don't be to the Italians.
No, of course not. Yeah. Italian people are lovely. They make wonderful things. Their food is amongst the best in the world. Their cars are adventurous and glorious. Their country is gorgeous.
But the politicians are terrible.
And the economy is a mess. Anyway, how do we cope in this environment? Because it's, we've seen a huge change over the last 6 to 8 months or so. We're seeing deglobalization. We're seeing higher interest rates. We're seeing the world become a lot more uncertain and very, very scary. What to do with your investments with Corky Koyman, Executive Director and Portfolio Manager, Denker Capital, in a moment.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
So I think what we've managed to do this evening is paint a picture of a deeply uncertain and divided and divisive world. And when it comes to your money, a huge amount of volatility and uncertainty there. So how do you keep your head about you when all around you are losing theirs? Corky Koyman, how do we stay calm and look for opportunities in amidst all of this noise, chaos and uncertainty?
First thing you do, and look, one advantage I've got, the disadvantage of is age, that my body and everything is slower. My mind is still okay. But one advantage that has brought is a lot of experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've learned in all these cycles, every time you reach a low point like this, when markets are falling, and you go back to the previous time this happened and what worked best. And generally at times like this, it's always best to just buy, or if you've got new investments or reassess your portfolio, make sure you sit with quality. And just by the way, Remgro reported today, and it was interesting for me because there's three companies within the Remgro portfolio that I look at quite a lot because they're in my sector, is First Rand, Outsurance and MMI. And I'll use those as examples at the end, but just to test. But so first thing you've got to do in your portfolio and what you do is think long term. Don't try and guess where the market is going to go in the next week, month, even 3 months. You've got to think 10 years. So this is an opportunity that the market is going to give you now, or is giving you perhaps already, of getting good quality companies at lower valuation. So look at their track records. And again, those three, we'll come back to them, but like First Rand, amazing track record. So look at track records, and at least then you can sleep well at night. You know that you're not going to wake up one morning in the next 5 years and find out that First Rand is in trouble, it's gone bankrupt, or, you know, every year you'll see, like it's done in the past 20 years, it will have grown a shareholder
value. Not to break your flow here, Corky, but there was a time, I mean, Laurie Dippenaar told me this once, he phoned GT Ferrer and said, I'm not too sure if we'll open tomorrow morning. I mean, that was 2008, in the global financial crisis. I mean, these things, it is possible in extreme circumstances that these things can go to the brink. But I mean, we're talking in the fullness of time. We're talking about quality of management. We're talking about business models. We're talking about the ability of them to ride out crises. And yeah, so far, so good.
October 2008, Lowry went through, I was in a meeting presenting to that one stage, and he asked when we presented what is happening in the world, almost like we did at the beginning. He said, is there no light at the end of this tunnel? And we said, then Lowry, there is. Yeah, there is. But you are right. People were worried at that stage that we're going to go into a 1930s type depression.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going there. But number one, even in the 1930s, your very good companies still came through in the end. So number one, quality. Then what one must remember, though, is that what is happening is that we're really seeing a change in the world. So we're going from an era of low interest rates and negative interest rates in Europe and in Japan and in Switzerland, for as examples, to where inflation and interest rates are going to go up, and they're going to stay higher for at least 5 to 10 years. And we can unpack that on another day, but
sure.
For the moment, believe that we're going to have higher interest rates, and we're going to have positive interest rates and positive higher than inflation, because it's the only way you're going to kill inflation in the end. Okay. So that does mean that valuations are going to change. You're not going to go back to the valuations you saw in party. That's why the market, parts of the market, especially, you know, the profitless tech and even technology is coming down a lot, because markets were paying too much for growth because interest rates were too low. And as you know, as interest rates go up, markets reassess the value of future growth and is paying more for certainty. So the winners don't think Apple was, or Apple might not be so agile. Even Apple should still come down, but I don't think Cathie Wood's fund, which was excellent, look at any of the shares in her fund, that they're going to go back to where they were. They won't. I can guarantee you that.
Sure.
But there are going to be other winners, companies that did do well, who will revalue. I think the other important thing is we're seeing a lot of currency dislocation at the moment, because the Fed has been the strongest and the most willing to hike interest rates aggressively to date. The market doubted that for a while, but after the last interest rate, when the inflation came back at 8.3 and then at Jackson Hole reaffirmed, we're going to do what's necessary. And so the market's now convinced they're going to keep hiking interest rates, even if the unemployment rate in the US, in the end, he said the unemployment rate in the US might go to 5%. At the moment, it's 3.5%. That means 1.5% of the current working population is going to lose their jobs if he keeps hiking interest rates. And he knows that, and he'll still hike interest rates. So that does mean, like, for instance, your financial sector, which was really bombed out during that period of low interest rates, will do better because they have higher interest margins, as an example. So thirdly, the market, as I said, market got too expensive. Now, partly when you start in a period like that, Howard Marks gave a brilliant talk a few months ago on a Goldman Sachs platform, where they asked him, but he doesn't believe in forecasting macroeconomics. So they said, well, how do you do it? And secondly, he did start buying aggressively at the end of 2008. So they asked me, how do you do that? And basically what he said, and this is the lesson for this evening, is he says, I believe you can't forecast the future, but you can learn from the present. And in 2008, where people were so negative and believed that the economy was going to fall over, then you know it's safe to start buying. Similarly, in 2021, where investors were putting money in SPACs, and as you know, SPAC was something, basically you wrote a prospectus which said, give me your money, I'll invest it for you. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but give me your money, and people were giving their money, then you know the money is too exuberant. So that was 100% exuberance towards end of 2008, 0% exuberance. So you've got to judge where you are, and you're most probably now 70% of the way from excess exuberance to maximum pessimism. So you're getting closer to the bottom. So if you then just quickly look at those three companies, MMI, OUTsurance, FirstRand, which I would buy all three. In fact, I run a Nedbank financials fund for Nedbank, South African one, and all three of those shares we're buying for different reasons. OUTsurance is an unbelievable growth company. I think it's the new potential Capitec, a Santam of many years ago. Okay. And remember, OUTsurance is still listed under RMI. And that during the unbundling of RMI, OUTsurance is now the new, very good management. And so here you've got a growth opportunity, but it is expensive. It is expensive. It's done well the last few weeks, even this year. But so a small amount of OUTsurance is, yeah, because there's a real growth market for it. There's a lot of lazy competitors and bad competitors there. Then you look at FirstRand, a real quality company, a real quality bank. It is the most expensive of the banks. So you could go and buy Absa, which is really cheap, but I'm just using it. Well, both sure. have got good track record. So both will come through this environment. You don't have to worry about either Absa or FirstRand, and the valuations are attractive. But then MMI, Momentum, where Ohili Meyer and Jeanette Marais went in and with Briscoe had turned that business around. And that is still partly being turned around. So here you've got a business where management for the past 5 years done a lot of work. The signs are visible. It is extremely cheap. They've come through both COVID. They've come through the floods and the riots in Natal. They've come through the whole problem with big reserves, big payouts, and they paid out, and the reserves are still very high. So, you know, regardless, I think, of what happens in South Africa, I know that management team has proven themselves turning the business around. It is very cheap, 8% dividend yield. So there are three stocks just in Remgro that you say, well, good management. Don't worry too much about the environment. They're not expensive. So looking back in 2, 3, 5 years' time, you say, wow, those were good stocks.
Kokkie, thank you very, very much indeed. Kokkie Kooiman is a director and, of course, portfolio manager at Denker Capital.